Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and all of us here are still a little bleary-eyed after an exciting weekend of football. Congratulations to Argentina for their first World Cup win in 3 decades. Now for our first story today. Back in October 2019, hundreds of mourners gathered at the Concord Church in Dallas, Texas, to say their goodbyes to Tatiana Jefferson. On that day, next to the baby blue casket was a large photo of Tatiana looking up, and bouquets of white and blue roses gathered all around.
Today is really about celebrating Tatiana's life, to remember the impact that she had, to remember the type of person that she was, to remember that she was a loving person, a smart person, a caring person, a gentle person, a person that was loved by her family and her friends.
And among the mourners and family were dozens of Fort Worth police officers and most of the members of the city council and city manager, all paying their respects to the young woman whose life was cut short by Fort Worth police officer Aaron Dean. October in Fort Worth can be warm, but it was cool on the night Tatiana was killed. The kind of cool where sometimes you might leave the front door open and let fresh air roam through the house. Because on this night, Tatiana was babysitting her 8-year-old nephew, and they'd been playing video games till late at night. They tried to make burgers as a late-night snack, but they'd burned them, so the door was open. At 2:23 a.m., a neighbor called a non-emergency number asking to check on the open door to make sure that the neighbors were safe.
I made the call because I thought that they were going to do what I called them to do. Check on my neighbor. And they didn't do that.
At 2:28 a.m., police officer Aaron Dean showed up to the house and made his way to the backyard. With a flashlight in one hand and a pointed gun in the other, he looked into her bedroom window, saw Tatiana, and almost immediately Aaron Dean shot his gun. By 2:30 a.m., Tatiana Jefferson was dead. 3 years later, her nephew remembered the details of that horrible night in court, and he said he'd been confused, unsure if whether he'd seen was real or a dream. On Thursday, a Texas jury convicted Aaron Dean of manslaughter.
It is my understanding that the jury has reached a verdict. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it a unanimous verdict?
Yes, Your Honor.
Verdict reads, we, the jury, find the defendant Aaron York Dean guilty of the offense of manslaughter.
Joining me now is Andrea Ritchie, co-author of No More Police, A Case for Abolition, and co-founder of Interrupting Criminalization. Andrea, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thanks so much for having me, Melissa.
Prosecutors sought a murder conviction. They received a conviction of Dean on manslaughter. Is Jefferson's family and community feeling a sense of justice and closure?
I don't know because I'm not in community with them, but what I do know is that both of her parents aren't here to see this day, and that a prosecution won't bring back the aunt that her nephew saw shot down before his very eyes trying to protect him. And I think that's one piece of the puzzle that is missing in these moments where we think that we've solved the problem when in fact we've left people in the community without healing and repair, and we haven't stopped the next incident where this might happen. The Washington Post recently released a study showing that 178 people were killed just in the last 3 years in a similar situation where someone was concerned for their safety and instead they wound up dead. And I think those are the conditions that we need to be looking to when we're thinking about what satisfaction, what justice, what repair looks like in this case. And I think it it requires us to examine what happens when we send an armed police officer into a situation when someone, as the neighbor just said, is just wanting to make sure that someone is okay.
Black women also are particularly vulnerable to police violence. Again, to kind of go back to the Washington Post, according to data from the Post, Black women account for about 28% of unarmed individuals who are killed by police since 2015, even though Black women account for only about 13% of women overall. What does that tell you, this vulnerability?
I think there's many ways in which Black women are, according to one study, the group most likely to be killed by police when unarmed. I think welfare checks are definitely a primary site in which that happens. And again, this speaks to why having police be people who are responding to calls for folks to check on people or make sure that they're safe is all too often a deadly option. I think also there are multiple ways in which Black women are perceived to be threats, even when, as you and I have discussed, they are simply at home, asleep, like Breonna Taylor, or simply questioning police officers' actions, like Sandra Bland, or in a situation where the cops are waging a war on drugs or responding to a call for assistance around domestic violence or sexual assault. And so there are many ways in which Black women find themselves at the crosshairs, not only of state violence, but also interpersonal violence that brings police to the scene. And then perceptions of Black women as inherently a threat and dangerous can often lead to additional violence in those situations.
What are the alternatives? If you see your neighbor's door open at 2 a.m, who else would you call but the police?
I might call my neighbor and find out if they're okay. And if I don't get a response, I might call some other neighbors and for all of us to go check and just make sure everything's all right. I think the neighbor in this case tried to call a non-police response line, tried to call a city agency that would check without sending an armed police officer. And I think the problem is that the police often monitor those calls and make their own decisions about whether they should be the ones to show up or the unarmed responders that the person initially called. And I think there are so many ways that we can ensure that we are looking out for each other and not delegating that responsibility to what turns out to be a deadly force in at least, 178 cases over the last 3 years. And so I think we need to think about how we keep each other safe and how we look out for each other. And I certainly don't blame anyone involved in this incident. The neighbor attempted to not call the police and just to check on and make sure that his neighbor was safe. And unfortunately, the city's response was one that proved deadly.
It does feel to me like there are at least 200 different pieces to this. One is the point that you're making about having alternatives for welfare checks, for just, community city-based authority that can help us in those spaces that aren't armed officers. The other piece does feel like perhaps not justice, but at least conviction potentially being meaningful. I do want to listen here to Amber Carr, who is Tatiana Jefferson's sister. And this is not long after she was killed.
You know, you want to see justice, but justice don't bring my sister back.
Right. And this is the point you made, Andrea. It doesn't bring her back. On the other hand, it is relatively rare for police officers to be charged, to be arrested, to be convicted, even when they're killing unarmed civilians. And I'm wondering if conviction, even of manslaughter, in this case of Aaron Dean, can move towards change.
I think that the point you just made is where the problem lies, which is that it's rare. And there is a real temptation here to exceptionalize the officer involved. I've seen a lot of sort of coverage that questions, whether he had a personality disorder, whether he was an appropriate person to be hired as a police officer. There's a real temptation in cases where there is a prosecution to frame this officer as the exception and not the rule. And I think, and to not look at this as an unfortunate yet natural consequence of sending armed police officers in response to a safety check or as a welfare check. And I think that Washington Post number, which I'm sure is a conservative estimate and undercount because we have so little information often about what led police officers to someone's home and the situations in which they were harmed or killed by cops, I think that systemic piece ends up missing when we focus on a single prosecution of a single officer. And it requires us to turn to the system that made a Tatiana's killing possible for justice. And while we might in 1 out of 100 cases get some kind of result there, that leaves the other 99 cases unresolved without any accountability or justice or healing or repair. And it also doesn't stop the next one from happening. Since 2019, since this prosecution was begun, again, hundreds of people have been killed in a similar situation. And so that's where I think we really need to focus. How do we make sure that we build a world where a Tatiana Jefferson would still be here? As her sister said, how do we build a world where we wouldn't be in a position where we can't bring her back? And that, I think, is where we really want to focus rather than exceptionalizing a single officer and a single outcome in a single case.
We have to take a quick break. More of this conversation in just a moment.
Dear class of 2024, hats off to you. Through a pandemic, a racial reckoning, an insurrection, anti-war protests, and more, you are here. I'm Kai Wright, and I want to know how you'll carry your experiences with unprecedented events into the world. Are you optimistic about our country's future? What about your own? Record a message at notesfromamerica.org and join me on Notes from America. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You're still with The Takeaway, and we're in conversation with Andrea Ritchie, author of Invisible No More, Police Violence Against Black Women and Women of Color. Andrea, I want to look at another case out of Louisiana from that same year, 2019. Ronald Green was killed in police custody that year. Just recently announced that those five officers are now finally being charged. When you name check, when you sort of date for us, Tatiana was killed in 2019. When we look at Ronald Green having been killed in 2019, obviously all of that before Derek Chauvin murders George Floyd, and Chauvin has been arrested, tried, convicted, sentenced. Why is it taking so long?
From what I understand in that case, because there was an extensive cover-up up to the highest levels of governance, and that even the people who were willing to look at the video or comment it characterized it as awful but lawful, that this is part of the normal course of policing, that this is not exceptional, it just is an indication of how deeply embedded violence is in policing. So I think there was, of course, a cover-up, but even among the people who had access to the information that belied the cover-up, there was a sort of acceptance that this is actually just how policing happens. This is policing. This is an appropriate response to a Black man driving on a road to be reunited with his family. And I think that's the lesson here, which is that unless something comes to light in the way of a video, whether it's of George Floyd being murdered or another Black man being murdered on the side of the road, that this kind of violence is just normalized and is part of the everyday reality of policing.
Do you see a possibility that since 2020, I guess on the one hand, I hear you citing these numbers, these statistics, and behind each one, a human, a story, not unlike Tatiana's. And yet I also want to hold on that the uprisings of 2020 in the wake of the murder of George Floyd might mean something for how local policing is happening. What do you know about change that may have come to Fort Worth, that may have come to Minneapolis, to any community?
I think the proof is in the pudding of the same statistics, which show that cops continued to kill people often in the same ways that George Floyd was killed or Ronald Green was killed on a daily basis. I think what has changed is public perception and understanding of what policing is and whether there's possibility for changing it from what it has proven itself to be over and over again. I think, for instance, a case like Ronald Green indicates that body cameras that were touted as the ultimate accountability mechanism have proven absolutely not to be. In this case, the officers tampered with them, concealed the footage. The governor of the state himself looked at the footage, didn't see a problem there, and everything would have carried on as normal had the family, the community, the media not pressed for video that was being concealed. And officers were spinning a story that this man had died in a car crash, in the same way that officers were getting ready to spin a story that George Floyd had had a medical emergency that they had nothing to do with. So I think community are getting more and more clear that this is not something that is going to be fixed with a technological fix like body cameras. It's not going to be fixed through one prosecution of one cop. It's something that we have to look to more systemically. And I really was looking to the words of Ronald Green's mother, Mona Hardin, who in response to the indictments was still saying, you know, Louisiana state police still make and break their own laws. And I think that is still the case, regardless of, you know, what happened in an individual officer's case, whether it's Derek Chauvin or these five officers. And I think the general public, what changed since 2020 is that more and more of the general public are clear about that and are clear about thinking about how do we take cops out of situations where they might kill a young woman in her home who is playing games with her nephew and protecting him against what she believes is an intruder. How do we take cops out of a situation where they can chase a man down back roads and, you know, tase and beat and drag him on the ground until he dies? How do we take police out of the situations where they're able to engage in this kind of violence, where they're making and breaking their own laws?
Andrea Ritchie is the co-author of No More Police, A Case for Abolition, and co-founder of Interrupting Criminalization. Andrea, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Melissa.